This is Company Cars, the podcast that tries to make sense of the car business. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Company Cars. So I was out for a walk last week at the park, and I walked through this parking lot that was filled with identical silver Honda CR-Vs. And that caught my eye, and it reminded me of this trend that's been happening in the new car market the past few years. And that's the complete and total dominance of light trucks in the U.S. new car market. So what is a light truck? So the light truck market is defined as pickup trucks, SUVs, crossovers, and minivans. And according to Forbes magazine, light trucks now account for 75% of new vehicle sales through the first half of 2020. And this is an all-time high for the new car market in the United States, but this number has been steadily increasing from a 50-50 mix in 2013. And as recently as 2009, traditional passenger cars such as sedans, coupes, convertibles, hatchbacks, and wagons outsold light trucks. On today's episode, we'll explore the steadily increasing dominance of light trucks in the new car vehicle market. Why are all these light trucks so popular? What has changed in the market since 2013? What's driving light trucks' popularity? And where did all the cars go? The increase in the dominance of light trucks is primarily driven by a fairly new category of vehicle called the crossover. And so this category includes cars like the Honda CR-V, Toyota RAV4, Chevrolet Traverse, and Buick Enclave. And this segment has gone from representing less than 4% of new car sales in 2000 to over 40% in 2018 if they were a standalone segment. Consumers are clearly in love with crossovers. But what is a crossover anyway? And what are we crossing over from? So a crossover is a mix between a passenger car and a pickup truck, in the sense that the underlying chassis and frame of the car comes from a passenger car, but the body that's placed on top is closer to a sport utility vehicle or a truck. And so, for example, the Honda CR-V is based on the Honda Civic. And so the underlying chassis and frame is very similar to that of a Civic. And then Honda just put a sport utility vehicle body on top. So that makes the CR-V a crossover between a traditional SUV, which historically was built on a pickup truck, and a passenger car. Consumers love crossovers for two main reasons. The first reason is that crossovers are a very functional shape. And the second reason is that the economics of crossovers have improved dramatically, so their incremental cost over a passenger car has declined. So we'll look at each of these in a minute and talk about what about each of these reasons make crossovers so attractive to consumers. So let's talk about crossovers' shape. So crossovers are generally this big open box design where you have one compartment for both passengers and cargo. And this big open box design inside means they typically have more cargo capacity than a similarly sized passenger car, and they have a more useful shape that's friendly for carrying awkwardly shaped cargo like a large plant or a table or a chair. And people tend to really appreciate this functionality, even if they're not carrying a large plant all the time or moving furniture. In addition, crossovers tend to sit a little higher off the ground than a passenger car, and a lot of consumers like sitting up higher with a nice view of the road. And this has become even more important as other drivers also get crossovers, trucks, and SUVs. So if you're driving a passenger car and everyone around you is driving a truck, SUV, or crossover, then it might be a bit difficult to see around you. And so if you get your own crossover, then it might be a little bit easier to see around all of these other tall vehicles as well. Finally, the extra height of a crossover brings some additional benefits as well. It makes the crossover a perfect height to get into and out of the car. So people don't have to crouch down or kneel to get in, and people are less likely to hit their head on the ceiling as they get in and out of the car. So this is especially handy for older people who might not want to kneel and hurt their knees as much as they're getting in a car, or it might be useful for taller people who don't want to hit their head on the roof so easily. And so that extra height in a crossover just makes it almost the ideal height for people to get in and out of a car. So now let's talk about the second and probably larger reason for why crossovers have mushroomed in popularity over the past decade, and that is the economics of crossovers have improved. So the incremental cost of driving a crossover over the equivalent passenger car has really narrowed over the past decade. And this is due to some advancements in design and engineering. So the fuel economy gap, for one, has narrowed significantly between cars and crossovers. So to illustrate this, in 2010, a Honda CR-V was rated for 24 miles per gallon, while the similar Honda Civic was rated for 29 miles per gallon, which is a 20% fuel economy difference. However, in 2021, the same Honda CR-V was rated for 30 miles a gallon, and the equivalent Honda Civic was rated for 32 or 33 miles a gallon, which is only a fuel economy penalty of 10% for buying the CR-V. So this cuts the fuel economy gap in half and makes the incremental cost of getting the crossover's shape that people like so much, much more affordable in terms of incremental cost of operating the vehicle. Another thing to point out is that the 2021 Honda CR-V is actually more fuel efficient than a 2010 Honda Civic. So somebody who is driving that 2010 Honda Civic and trading it in for a CR-V would actually experience either the same or lower fuel costs with the new CR-V than their old Civic. And that makes the crossover penalty in terms of fuel economy seem practically non-existent, because the car salesman can explain to the Civic owner that, hey, look, here's a CR-V, you get all this extra space inside, and there's no fuel economy penalty. It's just as good on gas and just as fuel efficient as your current car. So in addition to the fuel economy gap narrowing to improve the economics of crossovers, fuel prices have also declined substantially after peaking in 2014. So this means that any remaining fuel economy penalty between cars and crossovers is now also much more affordable to the consumer because the cost of that penalty has gone down. So according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration, the average cost of a gallon of gasoline has dropped from $3.44 a gallon in 2014 to $2.69 in 2019, which is a drop of about 22%. So with both of these factors together, the cost of the penalty of switching from a car to a crossover in terms of fuel costs has dropped substantially since 2013. Finally, one additional trend in the new car market has been the increasing length of the average auto loan. The average auto loan has gone from 60 to 66 to 72 months now. And what that does is it allows consumers to amortize the extra upfront cost of the crossover over a longer period of time. So the difference in the monthly payment today is smaller than it used to be 10 years ago. And that makes the crossover seem more affordable, even though it's unclear if crossovers today are any more affordable relative to cars 10 years ago. Automakers are also really excited about consumers' shift towards crossovers, and they've been doing a lot to encourage the switch over the past decade as well. In fact, the domestic automakers have become so focused on crossovers that they've stopped selling traditional passenger cars. For example, GM has stopped selling the Chevrolet Cruze compact sedan, and they've stopped selling the Buick LaCrosse large sedan. Ford stopped selling the Focus, the Fusion, and the Fiesta all in one fell swoop. And so these automakers are increasingly spending all of their time and energy on building crossovers for consumers. And so why are these automakers so excited about crossovers? Well, the first reason is that crossovers are much more profitable than their equivalent passenger cars. And automakers are going to sell cars that make money, and crossovers sell for more money than their passenger car equivalent, even though their incremental engineering costs may not be that much more. For example, a 2021 Honda Civic LX sells for around $22,000. And the equivalent Honda CR-V sells for around $26,500, which is about a 20% price differential. But the CR-V is not 20% more expensive to produce. So Honda makes more money on each CR-V they sell than they do on each Civic they sell. In addition, there are also some regulatory advantages to selling crossovers instead of cars. So all of the major automakers have to meet minimum fuel efficiency requirements for cars and trucks, but the EPA sets these requirements separately for vehicle type and vehicle size. So first you choose whether you're making a passenger car or a light truck, and then you look at how big the car or the truck is, and that tells you what the required average fuel economy needs to be. So crossovers are classified as light trucks by the EPA, and light trucks have lower average fuel economy requirements compared with their same size car. So by building a crossover instead of a car, it's slightly easier to meet this required average fuel economy levels. Another factor is that crossovers tend to be larger than their passenger car equivalents. So by making the crossovers larger, an automaker can sometimes move a car from one category to another on the size spectrum, and that also has an effect on the required average fuel economy that a car or a portfolio of cars has to produce. And now it's time for a short break. We'll hear from our sponsors, and we'll share some information about how to submit a listener question. The Company Cars podcast is sponsored by Rejected Conjectures Incorporated, a division of Integrated Derivatives. If you have a question that you want answered on the show, write us an email at companycarspodcast@gmail.com. So now we're swimming in a sea of crossovers, and we might be wondering, where did all the cars go? So some automakers have discontinued their passenger cars, like GM and Ford and Chrysler. They've stopped selling a lot of their passenger cars. But the reality is, all the passenger cars are still there. They've just been reborn, reimagined, and transformed into crossovers. Because remember, crossovers are based on the same underlying chassis and frames of passenger cars, but the automaker doesn't have to sell us the normal passenger car version, and they can choose only to sell us the crossover. And what's happened is, over time, as more and more consumers have bought crossovers for all of the reasons that we've talked about, automakers have discovered that, wait a minute, why do we need to keep selling passenger cars if they're becoming less and less popular? So let's just stop selling them. And this has kind of started a reinforcing circle. So as automakers have stopped selling passenger cars, when consumers go shopping, they see way more crossovers than cars. And so now it's kind of gotten to a point where it's much easier to find a crossover that meets your needs and fits all of your purposes. And so as fewer and fewer people buy passenger cars, then the remaining automakers are more likely to cut back too, and more cars will leave the market. So for example, GM and Ford kind of started this trend of stopping to sell passenger cars, and now it looks like Volkswagen will discontinue their Passat. And this was a car that they used to sell 120 or 130,000 copies of each year. And it sounds like they're probably going to discontinue this car for the US market soon. Okay, so crossovers are taking over the world. So is there a future for the passenger car? Well, some automakers actually think there is, and they haven't been quite as fast as GM and Ford to kill off their passenger car products. So these automakers believe that there will always be some core market for passenger cars, and in the future, maybe consumer trends and tastes will switch back to passenger cars, which are more affordable, more fun to drive, still more fuel efficient, and have greater privacy because they have enclosed trunks. So for example, if you're driving around in San Francisco, you might feel better with a passenger car that has a trunk that you can close, that nobody can see into, and that you can lock separately from the car itself. So the verdict isn't out yet for passenger cars, and a couple automakers are sticking with their cars and actually investing a lot of money into improving their cars. And these automakers include Nissan, Toyota, Hyundai, and Honda, all of whom have publicly said that they're committed to their sedans. They think they're very important as part of their product portfolio. And they're putting in a lot of money into redesigning their products, adding new features, making them more relevant to consumers. So these automakers are essentially betting that as other automakers exit, like GM, Ford, Volkswagen, as they leave the passenger car market, these automakers can capture a greater share of a declining market and just lie in waiting in case consumers' preferences turn. And if they do turn, these automakers will be there to pick up all of the demand because they've been in this market the whole time. So these automakers essentially believe that passenger cars might come back in the future. Another really important reason why an automaker might want to keep their passenger cars, even if consumers don't buy them in as large numbers as they used to, and even if they could make more money selling a crossover, is that passenger cars are very important for introducing new first-time car buyers to your brand. And the idea is if you can bring in a customer for the first time on a very affordable new car, like a Corolla or a Hyundai Elantra, then as they mature and as their life changes, they may stick with your brand for their future purchases. So the fresh college graduate who buys their first Corolla, when it's time to buy a new car because they're having children, they may buy a RAV4 from you instead of walking across the street to another manufacturer. So a car company that doesn't have that entry-level product might have a harder time building that younger customer loyalty over time. And that's a very interesting argument for why these automakers need to stay in the compact car and midsize car segments. So over time, we'll see if some automakers' decision to exit these passenger car segments, if that was a good idea or not. So the automakers that have exited compact and midsize sedans, basically they argue that anybody coming in looking for a compact sedan, we can put them in a compact crossover for about the same monthly payment. So time will tell, and time will see which strategy works out better. So do Honda and Toyota and Nissan benefit more because they were able to build customer loyalty with a broad range of entry-level products? But could GM and Ford have taken the better move by being able to channel more of their development resources into new growth products like electric vehicles or crossovers or other segments? Until we see what happens with the automakers, I fully expect that crossovers and other light trucks will continue to dominate the U.S. new vehicle market. So a 75% light truck mix versus passenger cars is probably going to be here to stay, at least for the next 2 to 3 years. And then anything can happen. Now it's time for listener questions. Today, we have a listener question from Diane in Dallas. She asks, my 2013 Chevy SUV has approximately 200,000 miles on it, but seems to perform okay. When do I know I need to replace my car? I.e., should I replace my car when the upkeep costs become higher than getting a new one? Diane, this is a great question. So my rule of thumb for when to replace a car is to replace the car when you lose faith in the car's ability to get you where you want to go, when you want to go, safely and reliably. And this sounds vague, and it's a little bit vague, but one way to identify if this is happening is to ask yourself a key question. Are you changing your plans because of your car? Or to put it more specifically, are you turning down trips or constantly renting cars because you don't believe your car will make the trip? Do you hold your breath every single time you go to start your car because you're worried it won't start? Are you spending a lot of time taking days off to visit a mechanic or a dealership or chasing down parts? If you answered yes to even one of these questions, it might be time to start thinking about buying a new car. It's also important to consider that a newer car is likely to be a big upgrade over your current car. So newer cars are safer, more reliable, have more technology features, and will be more comfortable and efficient as well. So buying a new car to replace an old car is not entirely a business case situation, because you'll also be getting new features and technology that your current car might not have. So you need to take into account the extra pleasure and benefit that you'll get from driving a newer car. And that's usually worth some amount of money to people. And the key will be to figure out how much are those extra benefits worth it to you? And are those benefits worth it enough to you for you to spend $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 on a new car? One other way to think about the problem is to use more of a bright line measure. And so if the cost of maintenance and repairs over a 12-month time frame for your current car is greater than 75 to 80% of its current market value, then maybe it's worth it to buy a new car. So for example, if you are spending $3,000 a year to repair your current car, but you check on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace or Cars.com and see other examples of your current car selling for $4,000, then maybe you're better off putting that $3,000 that you would have spent on repairs and maintenance towards a new car instead of another year of your current car. And one last thing to consider is where your life is headed. So this isn't a life podcast or a philosophy podcast, but if you know your life is about to change dramatically in the next year or two, you might want to put off your plans to buy a new car. So if you're planning to move to a different climate or get married or have children, then maybe you might want to wait until you have some more clarity about those plans so you know what features and capabilities you should look for in your next car. So it would be pretty painful if you bought a two-seater convertible, for example, only to find out that you're having twins next year and you need a back seat that can accommodate two car seats. On the flip side, if you know your life is going to be fairly stable over the next couple of years and you're ready for a new car, then maybe now is the time to buy a new car because you know what you need and you know that whatever you buy, you'll be able to use in your life for the next 3 to 5 years and you won't have to trade cars again. Ultimately, buying a new car is a very personal decision, and it's a very big financial decision. So the right time is going to differ from person to person, and it's going to be different at different points in life circumstances, even for the same person. And so, Diane, I wish you the best of luck as you think about whether or not you need a new car. Of course, it takes a whole village to make a podcast, and so we want to make sure we give due credit to the individuals involved with making this podcast. Our chief technical advisor is Turn It Off and On, and our legal and strategy consultant is Bill Meemore. Finally, we're assisted by our product planner, Ada Trim, and our finance and insurance manager, Mark Up the Rates. So that's going to wrap it up for us today. Join us again on another episode of Company Cars, where we'll explore another question about the car business.